Well, the Antipodean bid to host the Women's Football World Cup has been given a late boost, just 1 week out from a final decision on the 2023 tournament. Australia's joint bid with New Zealand has been formally endorsed now by the Southeast Asian Football Federation. This could give Australia the edge over Colombia and Japan, the other two nations bidding to host the tournament. Tracy Holmes is Sports Present Event Centre and host of The Ticket. Hi, Tracy. Welcome back.
Thanks, Brian.
Tracy, it feels like there's a bit of momentum gathering around the Australia-New Zealand bid. This would be the first time, obviously, we've ever hosted the World Cup of the World Game. How big a win would this be for Australia and for football in this country?
Look, I think it would be huge in a number of areas. As you say, big for football, big for women's sport, and also big for Australia and New Zealand because it is that joint bid globally. And we know what happened when Sydney hosted the Olympic Games and, the kudos that it got around the world. And especially as the whole planet is actually going to be coming out of this COVID-19 pandemic, you know, people are going to be looking for things to celebrate. We know that tourism is going to be way down. We know that all sorts of things have been deflated, and this would be some sort of a coming out parade for sure.
It sure would be. I remember many years ago I was in the United States when the Women's World Cup was there and the US beat China, I think it was. And at that time, women's football was not very high profile, but it was huge news in the US at the time. So it really
can make a
difference.
Yeah, that's what gave women's football in the US such a profile and enabled its expansion. And when they won the last World Cup, this is the USA in 2019 in France last year, there are over 1 billion viewers of the Women's World Cup. If we are successful for 2023, all of those figures are set to be increased. I mean, even to the point where the last World Cup, we're expanding again. There'll be 32 teams here in Australia and New Zealand. And this as part of FIFA's global expansion program, they realise they've probably hit the peak as far as men's football goes, and the only area for growth really is the women's game, and that's what they'll be focused on.
Well, what is the likelihood that this bid from Australia and New Zealand will succeed over Japan and Colombia? What have we got going for us that they don't?
Well, pretty much everything. It's neck and neck with Japan. I think Colombia, unfortunately, as much as they'd love to have it in South America, where we know football is huge, but they've got a number of issues that are probably far worse than the economic issues that we're seeing even in Japan in recession. We know Australia's not going to look too pretty coming out of this. But on most measurements, Australia surpasses Japan, who sits in second place, except for one, and that is availability of accommodation and, infrastructure as far as travel. You've got a tight kind of area in Japan and you can get around very quickly. So that the only thing that goes against us is a lot of travel because it's going to be held between a number of cities between New Zealand and Australia. That's a lot of border crossing, etc. But in every other area, stadiums, team and referee facilities, the international broadcast centre, commercial appeal, ticket sales, we are ahead. Technically, and then it comes down to the politics.
I was just going to say that you might be ahead technically, you might have the better venues, you might have the better weather, shall I say, but it doesn't always get you there. We remember, of course, the bid for the Men's Football World Cup. Australia only managed to pick up one vote in the end, and the countries, well, there's been a lot said and revealed about the politics of that. So what are the politics here? Who are the key players Australia needs to win over? And how likely or unlikely do you think that politics would derail our bid?
Look, I'm really hoping not. And one of the big factors here is that for the first time, the votes are going to be transparent. We're going to know who voted for who in every round. And so the way it works, you might remember with other host cities, they have an initial vote and the one that finishes at the bottom, if there's not a clear majority right from the start, the vote that finishes at the bottom is then eradicated and then it goes to another vote and then it's split between the remaining two. So basically, you have to to try and impress each of the confederations. So there's the Asian, there's the North and Central American, there's the South American, there's the African, European and Oceania. Look, I feel pretty confident. One thing we have to remember also is that, you know, these FIFA voting members should remember what happened in Brazil. Now, Brazil hosted the World Cup and the Olympics within 2 years of each other back in 2014 and 16, and it has proven to be a bit of an economic disaster with all sorts of other things overlaid on top. This is different because Tokyo is going to be hosting the Olympic Games in 2021. Their economy is in a really bad state. They're looking at a $6 billion increase just in the delay of the Olympic Games. And then they'd be asking them, you know, to host and promote one of the world's biggest events 2 years later. I think that plays into Australia, New Zealand's favour, given that on all of these measures, we come out on top.
It sounds like it. Tracy, when you said just a moment ago, this is the first time the voting, FIFA voting on this has been open, is this a change since the politics were revealed of the processes around the men's game?
Yeah, it's a big change. It's really significant because, you know, in the past, as we know, people have said, yes, we're going to vote for you. And even when we got one vote, there were still like half a dozen people that claimed that was their vote. Now, clearly it wasn't. And they're not going to be able to do that this time. So I think that puts more responsibility, more pressure on their shoulders to think about voting for the right person and who deserves it as opposed to who your best mate is.
It is a tricky time, isn't it, to be thinking about this, as you say, all those border crossings, people coming in from overseas. It's 3 years away, but the world is in lockdown, so to speak. And that's posing problems for football in Australia more broadly, just as it has with other sports, of course. The A-League is due back on July 16, but the competition is still in discussions with Fox Sports over a broadcast deal. Will bringing the World Cup here, do you think, help with recovery post-lockdowns? And do you think these broadcast deals are getting in the way of the sports developing at a time when they really need support?
Well, you know, there's a couple of things, Fran. I think our biggest football codes, as in AFL and NRL, they've been able to survive by having a co-deal with free-to-air and pay TV. But pay TV is not a big pickup in Australia. Only a quarter of the households have it.
Yeah.
And when you have a sport that is not the AFL and the NRL heading to pay TV, they disappear. Look at what's happened to Rugby Australia. I mean, they're almost non-existent in the public sphere. And I think this is one of the things that all sports need to look at going forward. Fox obviously has its own issues. Optus is there and has been streaming. They did the last World Cup along with SBS and did very well out of it. So I think that whole thing is going to be reconfigured as well. That's part of, you know, the fallout from COVID-19.
Well, they should all get behind the women's game, that's for sure. We all saw that opinion poll this week, which showed, I think, the Matildas were the nation's favourite sporting team, or close to. Tracy, thanks very much.
Thanks, Ryan.
And good luck on the bid. Tracy Holmes, sports presenter of some renown, of course, and host of The Ticket.